We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Molly and Hall. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Are the Bears in win now mode, or are they in development mode, or both?
No, I would say both. We feel like right now with this roster that we've built over the last several years, that we really believe that right now we're in a great position to go out and win a lot of games and win right now. With that said, we are building somewhat of a younger roster now, where we as a coaching staff have to be able to develop these players that we're drafting. So there'll be a great plan for that, but we're so excited for the future in the 2021 season. Right now, you know, as we speak, this morning, I'm putting together schedules of the offseason program and how that's going to work with all the new rules, getting into training camp and how that's going to be. But there's an excitement. There's a really good vibe right now in our building. And, you know, we're right there where we need to be. And we have a great mix of veteran leaders and young guys. And so for me and our coaching staff, that's why we do this thing. And it's just very important that our guys understand that. And shoot, anything can happen. So we're ready to rock and roll.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David out and the great Tom Thayer in this morning. And I'm humiliated by your presence, sir. What a glorious human.
I'm leaving.
How did you become such a great man?
In 1 hour, I'm leaving.
I don't blame you. I think you got to wait for crosstalk, but that's okay. I can talk to those guys alone if you're so mean-spirited. That was Matt Nagy. He is on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and we talk to Ross all the time, and Ross has been a big proponent of Matt Nagy. And I gotta tell you, you know, I was pleased when they got a guy like Justin Fields, because I think it would be an awful pity if Matt Nagy were to come to Chicago with this offense in his hip pocket and never have the right guy to run it. And now maybe he does. Maybe Justin Fields, maybe this draft pick changes the way we perceive the Chicago Bears and their offensive scheme and their ability to score points, which has been a problem, quite frankly. They've done a better job of preventing points than of scoring points in the Matt Nagy era. And I think that, just being fair to the guy, it's going to be good to see him have a quarterback that is his handpicked player. He's the guy that recognized that this was a generational talent, I believe. He was told that by Ryan Day, the head coach at Ohio State. And he said that always stayed with him. So I don't think that's power of suggestion. I think that Justin Fields has been that player.
Yeah, you know, I've known Ross for a long time, and he always has his hand on the pulse of the NFL all around the league.
Yep.
And he asked Matt Nagy, do you feel you're in a win-now situation, or are you building for the future? And Matt said a little bit of both. And I'll tell you this, if Aaron Rodgers leaves Green Bay, it's win now. It's win the division this year. It's compete in the playoffs this year. And then you kind of get a feeling of what the quarterback position is going to contribute. If Andy Dalton gives you a better opportunity to win the division this year, then I'm going to go with Andy Dalton until I feel that Justin Fields is up to speed. And then, you know, whether it's series, whether it's a start opportunity, whatever the factors are that become of Justin, depending upon his development, then I'll make the decision then. But again, and I hate to think of what you know, what the other teams are doing within the division, when I'm talking about my own team. However, Aaron has such an impact on the Green Bay Packers and within this division. If he is no longer a part of the NFC, hey, man, we're all in. We're all in. And I think for the defensive personnel the Bears have, to have Mike Pettine here, who's the former defensive coordinator of Green Bay, who can be the assistant to Sean Desai as he develops into that defensive coordinator position. Man, I am pushing all of my chips into the middle of the table, and I'm saying, listen, this is division championship right now.
Okay, so does that mean that you start the quarterback? Does that mean that you go with the veteran? What do you have to wait and see what they look like?
Yeah, you listen, you know, it's kind of unfair that we're sitting here and they use that term QB1 when they signed Andy Dalton,
exactly,
because they had no other QB there. And listen, I have all the respect in the world for Andy Dalton, for what he's able to put up with a organization like Cincinnati. I admire what he's been able to do, how he's been able to stay on the field, the direction that he's been able to lead that team in, always being mentally and physically prepared to do his job. However, when you draft a guy behind me and I'm a member of the Bears, it's my obligation to fend him off. If he's a better player than mine and he takes my job, then that's what he's been able to do. I don't think there is any number one quarterback in the race yet. I think it's a decision that's going to be made throughout a lengthy offseason. And I hope that they have every opportunity to have OTAs, to have the veteran and the rookie mini camp, to have the normal length of training camp, now that they have the 3 preseason games, to give every quarterback who's fighting for that opportunity the chance to win the job.
You know, I'm not arguing with you in any way, but I think that I'm just curious as to what win now means, because I think we look at their offensive line, for instance, Tom, and you know, the guy they drafted, Tevin Jenkins, in the second round, 39th overall, they traded up to get him, is the only left tackle on the roster. They don't even have anyone that's taken a snap in the NFL at left tackle. You would seemingly believe he has to be the left tackle. So if you line him up, and I want you to line him up, I'll let you say it. How do you line up this group without Charles Leno Jr. and with Tevin Jenkins? Is it just a flat out replacement?
Well, I don't want to ask a question with a question.
No,
because
good.
In your mind, you don't say it yet. If you just took the roster for what it is right now, who's your backup left tackle? So with that being said, so I'm going to go with Tevin. I'm going to go with Cody. I'm going to go with Sam Mustipher. I'm going to go with James Daniels, and I'm going to go with Fetty at right tackle. If there's a complete lack of development by Tevin to be able to go in and fill in the left tackle position right now, I may consider Cody Whitehair for the left tackle position.
Wow.
Because he has...
Dustin would love to hear that. He's been talking about that for a while.
Cody right now, he played left guard as well as I've seen that position played for quite a while here with the Bears. But he also has a snippet of experience, or some experience at the college level, of playing left tackle.
Yeah.
And if you could put an experienced left guard next to him and he can go out there, and then you can put the tight ends in a useful position to kind of help him at the snap of the ball, I think Cody could go out there and be a physical left tackle. But the best case scenario is for Tevin to be able to have the footwork, the balance, the mental capacity to go out there and play left tackle for now for the next 10 years.
See, I don't think they have a left tackle. Maybe they do, and we'll see this kid play, and maybe he's the answer. Maybe. But I don't know that there is an answer with Cody White. I'd have to see that. I get it. He's played on the left side. So look, didn't Matt Burke move from center to left tackle for one season?
Right.
I mean, I understand the need to move people around if I'm not mistaken, I think Juan Castillo loves like these big giant inside players. So it would make sense.
And I, you know, too, is let's not forget about Larry Borum, who they did draft, yes. and he's got a minimal amount of experience at left tackle. He's a big body. He's not going to be able to play left tackle at 350,
right.
but can he play left tackle at 325? Yeah, it's possible. So, again, I'm not, you know, completely avoiding the conversation with Larry, but they brought Tevin in here to be a starting left tackle.
Yeah, they brought him in to be the left tackle.
Yeah.
And I think that the rest of those positions are kind of set in my mind anyway. I think everyone you talk to loves Sam Mustipher and what he brings in terms of all the intangibles, the leadership, the understanding of the position, yelling out the blocking, you know, who's got to be where. I mean, it seems like everybody loves him and thinks that he's that guy. My only concern would be, can he hold up? You know, it's a 17-game season, and he was having a hard time holding up over, you know, didn't he miss a game or two when he finally got on the field?
He got his first start, and then he got injured in his first start, and then he came back. However, they're fortunate to have Alex Barrs, because Alex Barrs also has starting experience at left tackle when he was at Notre Dame. And he's kind of the jack of all trades. I think you could probably have Alex as your number one go-to guy in case there's an injury.
So he could play anywhere on the line, is what
I
saying.
Believe so.
Okay.
He started a game at center this past year. He's played right guard, left guard, and I think right tackle is he could transfer to that position, but he does have experience at left tackle.
That's unbelievable, because they did. Who's the kid they signed? Is he a right tackle? They
Wilkerson.
Signed?
Wilkerson. Yes. He's got more. He's got most of experience on the right side.
Yeah, I know. And he's not, like I said, they don't have anyone that's taken a snap on the left side, but he's just an experienced player, so you wonder how that would work. They don't really have a swing tackle, because they don't really have a left tackle. And I think that's kind of the issue that we're talking about. But they have three centers, basically, right? But two of them are their starting guards. Is it a bad – I'm just saying, is it a bad idea to have one of those guys play center over Mustipher, or is he the starter in your mind?
Sam's the guy. You know, hey, listen, man, you know – Jay Hilgey was a free agent center.
Yeah.
You know, and he developed into what he developed. When you go back and you watch the intricacies of the interior of the offensive line and you look at what Sam Mustipher contributes, he's a great helper to each side, right and left. He has good balance to get to the second level and block linebackers. He has a complete understanding of every single assignment on the offensive line, where he's never going to make a mental mistake and put the offensive line in the wrong direction. So everything that's required out of the position, he has that ability to do that. And I think throughout your time in the NFL, you're always expected to get stronger in the offseason. You're always expected to get more developed. And it just that's what every guy is obligated to in their offseason preparation.
Okay, so, I haven't done this exercise in quite a long time, Tom. But
bench press?
No, I haven't done that either in a while. But there is, when you look at drafted players in the NFL, you can go position by position and figure out where guys, how they come into the league and where they play, et cetera. And you will find that the largest strike ratio for first round picks is at left tackle. Yep. Usually, if you want a left tackle, you got to go and get one in that first round of a draft. And the highest number of undrafted free agents is at the center position.
Yep.
You can find there are teams that don't believe in drafting a center, because you can find that position exactly as we're talking about with Jay. You can find a potential Hall of Fame type player on the street as an undrafted free agent, because centers, there's usually, you know, maybe it's a size issue, or there's usually a reason that guys are there, and there's also a lot of mental acuity required to play the position. So you can overcome whatever your physical limitation is if you're smart enough and you know what you're doing. And we're talking about that with Sam Mustipher. I think that's what's fascinating to me when I look at this group, because they if the entire NFL felt that Tevin Jenkins was a left tackle, he probably wouldn't have fallen to 39. Now, I don't know, because Darisaw fell to – like 20, the Vikings got him at like 24,
right?
Something like that. And that, I thought he would go higher, but frankly.
You know, with Tevin and his opportunity to play left tackle in college, he was playing well. However, when they had the injury by the right tackle, the backup offensive tackle had more experience playing left tackle than he did right tackle, so that's why they moved Tevin back to right tackle and had him, you know, fulfill the injury void there. So I do think, you know, to me, I have to see he's got to prove to me he cannot play, because his demeanor and everything that I've seen out of him and the films that I've watched of him at left tackle, I've seen a guy that I want to sit, I want to develop. I seen a guy that I really do believe that he can get out of his stance. You know, in two nowadays, offensive linemen are so, they're not in their 3-point stance a lot. So now when you're in a 2-point stance, you're already in a quicker athletic position rather than coming out of a 3-point stance. So I'm gonna allow Tevin. You tell me, what's the most comfortable position, the most confident position you want to come out of? And if that's in a 2-point stance, then hey, man, stay up, do it, make, you know, just fulfill your assignment.
It's great. That's good stuff, Tom. 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Eddie is in displays. Good morning, Eddie. How are you?
Good, bud. How you guys doing?
Good, Eddie.
Good. Hey, guys. So, quick question, and just trying to think this through. I know Justin Fields, you know, needs reps and, you know, get ready, get NFL ready, but from what they say, I mean, isn't he the best at picking up things and the playbook and whatnot? I think we should just let the kids start and, you know, go with it. I mean,
yeah, Eddie, you know, you hear a lot of good things about a guy when he's selected in the first round and you tapped into next year's first round to take him. I think you got to see it. I think it has to unfold. I think you'll know pretty quickly. And Tom, you're right. You know, you got to be able to ask him a question and there's the answer. You know, if he's not able to do that, then you got to kind of give him some time to figure that out.
Yeah. You know, one thing, Eddie, I think going forward with Justin is just because he has so much versatility to his athleticism, you're not going to see a stationary drop back throw, a 7-step drop and get the ball out of his hands. You look at what does the defense opponent offer you? How can you put the defense in a vulnerable position? And is that getting Justin to the outside edge and then throwing the ball? You can develop all these patterns equally as threatening to your opponent by putting the quarterback in a different position. You can stress the rush of an outside defender if he's not very good by putting Justin in and using his skills to get in that position. So that's why I'm saying, to me, it's there. You know, there is no front runner. It's going to be an honest evaluation from day one. That starts with rookie minicamp. How is Justin able to react during rookie minicamp? Because you don't have the pressure of all these veterans looking over your shoulder. And if he goes out there and handles all the information that fed to him so efficiently, man, that is going to increase my interest in getting him prepared to go out and play. And I think that's, you know, when you get Matt Nagy to the podium after one of the first couple practices of rookie minicamp, those are the questions that's going to be needed to be asked of him. As what do you think about how he transferred classroom to field? And then he'll tell you a little bit about him.
All right, we're going to switch gears and talk Cubs. We'll bring in Zach Zaidman next. It's the Mully and Haw Show with the Ginger Hair Genius coming up, and the great Tom Thayer with us this morning on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Zach Zaidman.
We're live on the radio.
Cubs radio pregame and postgame host.
Here's the pitch, swung on and hit to deep center field. Way back, Duggar at the wall, leaps, it's gone. A home run for Chris Bryant.
Former Bears radio sideline reporter.
Down here with Jay Cutler. What were you guys trying to do on that play to Martellus Bennett?
Try to score.
A guy with a great head of hair.
And what color would your hair be, Zach?
Luscious red locks, Pat. Thank you so much for asking. It's real and it's spectacular. Some would refer to it as Syracuse orange.
Zach Zaidman.
The ginger hair genius. He was a hit yesterday, right, guys?
With Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tom Thayer, the great man himself, sitting in for David this morning. And how about this? We add a ginger hair genius to the mix. Zach Zaidman, the man himself, he joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Zach, good morning. God bless you. Fine, sir.
Molly, good morning. Big Tom, how you doing?
Zach, fine, thanks. Nice talking to you. The gingered hair genius, as affectionately known.
Yeah, he giggles as he says my name, and then he just gets very enthusiastic about you. It hurts, yeah, Zach.
If you know what hurts? If you get punched in the kidneys by Tom. So we're very serious when it comes to talking any sports with Tom Thayer.
Let's talk about the Cubs, and let's talk about the way that they've been winning. And, you know, I said this to Tom earlier, and it's really annoying. The Pirates are this weird boogeyman team. And even when you come back to sweep that series, they managed to survive and win by a run yesterday. Why? Why has that team been a pain in the keister thus far when they have struggled against others?
I just think it's the fact that they've played the Pirates so many times over the first month plus of the season. And in the early going, especially April, the Cubs had difficulties offensively, and the starting pitching hasn't been what you'd like it to be so far. But the offense has gotten it going now. And yesterday, to me, if you actually watched all nine innings of the game, what you saw were Kyle Hendricks generating soft contact, and the balls just happened to drop in. It wasn't as though the Pirates did anything special, and that furious Cubs rally in the ninth inning just fell short. I mean, they scored three runs. They had the tying run on second base. Javi Baez, who was initially getting the day off because he's resting a stiff back, came in to pinch hit and hit a ground ball to second, so that ended the rally. But I think you saw a lot during this homestand in which the Cubs went 5-1. The Cubs have won 7 of their last 10. The offense is back, in large part because Chris Bryant is back for a variety of different reasons. But Bryant is hitting .308, 9 home runs, 22 RBIs. He's number 3 in Major League Baseball in OPS. That's the big stat that sees if hitters can hit for power and get on base, which is exactly what you want in baseball. And Bryant is number 3 in the entire major leagues in OPS at 1047, only Mike Trout and J.D. Martinez are better. So as he goes, the offense goes. But it's more than that. I think when you play at Wrigley Field, you have to be able to adapt to the different weather conditions that change the dynamics of any game. So in the summertime, you can hit home runs. The Cubs have primarily been a home run hitting team. But when the weather isn't great, and it hasn't been great over the last week, I think the ability to manufacture runs is so critical. And because of the moves that Jed Hoyer made during the offseason, the Cubs now have the ability to manufacture runs. They're not only reliant on the home run. So the Cubs are near the top in all the manufacturing offense statistics, extra bases taken, meaning when you extend singles into doubles, doubles into triples, total bases taken, which is advancing bases on fly balls, wild pitches, pass balls, etc. And they've stolen a whole bunch of bases this year, which makes them very different from an offensive standpoint than the team they had last year. And I think once the starting pitching gets sorted out, the Cubs are a team that you have to reckon with because they have different ways in which they can beat you.
Hey, Zach, when you look at your experience of broadcasting football, we go to an opponent's stadium, whether it's an atmosphere like Minnesota or Green Bay or something, and you look at the Cubs, 13-8 at home, 4-9 on the road. Is there a completely different emotional attachment to being on the road as a baseball player or a broadcaster than it is when you know how ineffective it can make you if you're on the road in a loud stadium?
I think playing at Wrigley Field when there are fans in the stands is a tremendous advantage for the Cubs because they are very heavily involved, and that's not the case everywhere. It is in some spots, but not in every major league ballpark. So I think that's where you have a difference. It's hard for me to tell this season because you don't have full capacity at every stadium, and we are not allowed to travel. So I don't know what it's like post-pandemic with fans in the stands in visiting ballparks, but I do think that is part of the dynamic.
Zach, the Cubs obviously off today. Then they come back, and it's Edward Alzolay, who the last time we saw him, he had like a little dizzy issue. But he's taking on Justin Bieber, whatever the hell that guy's name is. not an easy opponent. And Bieber is he's not unbeatable. He's lost a couple games, but it's going to be a challenge because he's always pretty good. And you know, you look at the Cubs needing to win because they're still just at 500, despite how hot they have been and how good Bryant has been. And they've got different injuries going on here. So it's an important little two-game set in Cleveland and then on to Detroit for the weekend.
Yeah, I think that you have to navigate through the injuries this week. I think that's the biggest thing. And they'd love to have Justin Bieber on the mound in Cleveland. Instead, they're going to get Shane Bieber. And that's a little bit more of a challenge for him. But I think the injuries are the greatest concern heading into the games this week, because you lose Jake Marisnyk to the right hamstring strain yesterday, and Marisnyk over his last 15 games was hitting .303. In fact, the complementary pieces that Jed Hoyer added over the offseason, they've all done well lately. Over the last 15 games, Matt Duffy is hitting .325. Eric Sogard over the last 15 games is hitting .364. So it's important to get Jock Peterson going, and he's finally heating up since coming off the injured list. 9-for-24 over his last seven games. He's hitting .375. Had a good homestand against Pittsburgh, which I think was very important for Peterson. The flexibility that you get with Chris Bryant being able to play all the outfield positions, because remember, you've got Ian Happ on the injured list, still recovering from the bruised ribs with that collision with Nico Horner in Cincinnati last weekend. Horner still on the injured list, hopes to be able to come back this upcoming weekend against Detroit, but he's not going to be available in Cleveland. Jason Hayward's dealing with a hand injury. We don't know how serious that is. So there are some issues that they're going to have to deal with. Nick Martini is really the only healthy reserve outfielder that they've got, a native of Crystal Lake. So it will be interesting to see how David Ross navigates the roster over the two-game series that they've got going on against the Indians this week.
Zach, I don't like the overused stat of the launch angle and the exit velocity. However, I do like the incoming wind stat that you guys talk about in the broadcast. And Coom brought it up yesterday that the only chance of hitting a home run was probably in position of where the scoreboard is set in the outfield. Do you think when you have that incoming wind, it affects the swing thought of the opponents against a guy like Hendricks?
I don't think it affects that. What I do think it does is it helps the opposing pitcher, and you saw that with Tyler Anderson. And I think Kyle Hendricks tried to do the same thing yesterday. As I mentioned, he generated the soft contact, Tom. Those balls just happened to drop in, and the Cubs were hurt by some errors in the first inning, so it gave Pittsburgh a four-run first, and the Cubs were playing catch-up from the get-go, which is very difficult. But Tyler Anderson, the lefty that was on the mound for Pittsburgh, you're not afraid to allow the team to hit the ball when the wind is whipping in the way it was yesterday. And I do think when it comes to launch angle, here's all you have to know. Pitchers have adjusted, and no one has done a better job this season of adjusting back to what pitchers are trying to do than Chris Bryant. And right, we spent a lot of time talking about this on Friday on the air with Coom during the broadcast, because Chris Bryant now has a little bit more of an upright stance, still hits out of that crouch, but a little bit more of an upright stance because the high fastball became his kryptonite. And what he's done now is, instead of that traditional launch angle swing that's become so popular in Major League Baseball, he's now hitting down on the ball. And there are two reasons why he's been so effective this year. One, he's healthy, and he really hasn't been over the last 3 years, and he's changed his approach. He's hitting down on the ball, and it's resulted in him putting up numbers that we've become familiar to seeing from Chris Bryant over the course of his career. And I think you're going to see more hitters try to adapt to that, because you can't allow the pitchers to have free rein with the high fastball when they know everyone's trying to launch the ball out of the yard. And that's why, to me, it was so critical to change the dynamics of this offense during the offseason. Could you imagine last year when the Cubs had Yu Darvish, Kyle Hendricks was looking like Kyle Hendricks, and they had that terrific starting staff? If they had the kind of balance offensively that we've seen during this stretch with guys like Duffy and Marisnyk and Sogard in there to complement the Cubs core, they would have gone a lot deeper in the playoffs last year than that early exit to Miami.
Hey, Zach, a question for Kuhn, maybe you can answer on the next broadcast. That double leg kick of Anderson, the pitcher for Pittsburgh yesterday, does that affect the timing of a batter, or is the timing of the release of the pitch the exact same? Because I get kind of fixated on watching this double leg kick that kind of makes me look like the pitcher's off balance. However, he gets the ball across the plate. Do you ever see that, or did you even notice that while you're broadcasting the game?
Yeah, you definitely notice it, but I don't think it played a big impact yesterday, Tom, and I say that because it was the third time this season that the Cubs have seen Anderson, and they had rocked him the previous two times. He was 1-2 against the Cubs coming in to yesterday's action, and that's why the win that you talked about whipping in yesterday, I think, played a bigger role than Anderson's pitching, just because he was able to pitch with confidence. He had a four-run lead before he even took the mound, and he wasn't afraid to give up home runs because of the conditions at Wrigley yesterday.
You know, we know that it was bad luck maybe for Kyle Hendricks, but the last time out, you saw pretty good from Zach Davies. He had not been pitching well, and he finally seemed to get it together. And we mentioned Edward Elzeli is improving. Where are they at with their rotation? Do you like what you're seeing as they're coming around here? Obviously, the last swing through it pretty good.
I'm encouraged by what I heard from Kyle Hendricks. You know, he's authentic when he meets with the media following ball games. And what he told you yesterday is he felt pretty good on the mound coming off the complete game victory against the Dodgers to begin the homestand last Tuesday. So that tells me that Hendricks is feeling much better about the action on his pitches. He's got that feel, which is so big for guys who don't overpower you with stuff. And Kyle Hendricks is a guy who has to rely on feel, getting movement on his pitches. So the fact that he feels good makes me feel good in terms of his effectiveness going forward. Alzolay has been fantastic and continues to go deeper into games, which to me is very encouraging. Outside of Arrieta, he's probably been their most consistent starter. Arrieta, if he has a good bullpen session in Cleveland, in all likelihood will be activated for the Detroit series. And he has been by far and away the Cubs' most consistent pitcher this season. And the only time he got rocked was because he had the cut on his thumb, which impacted his cutter. So if he's healthy, I think that's a huge thing going forward for the rotation. And then the key becomes, can you get Zach Davies to look like the consistent pitcher that he's been over the course of his career and get Trevor Williams right? You know, we've seen flashes of what Williams can be. You just need to see it a little bit longer.
Zach, great stuff. Great catching up with you. Appreciate your time, buddy.
See you, Zach.
Take care, guys.
That is the ginger hair genius. That's Zach Zaidman. 312-644-6767 is the number. We're here with the great Tom Thayer on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Tonight in Oklahoma, Buddy Ryan will be inducted into the Oklahoma Sports Hall of Fame. And I couldn't help but thinking about that when I was waiting for you guys to give me a shout this morning, that back in the early days, when Buddy wanted to put together that defense, there were certain things that you had to have. But one of the most important components was unselfish, dominating defensive linemen. That didn't, you know, take off, rush the passer every down. You had to protect the linebackers, Mike Singletary, Otis, and Will. And you know what? No one was better than Steve McMichael. He was truly a warrior, and that defense would have never, ever been anything like it was without the contributions of Steve McMichael. And you know, I just kind of shake my head tonight, you know, thinking, you know, your buddy's going into, you know, the Oklahoma Hall of Fame. But a lot of that is attributable to not only, you know, his schemes, but the actual players. And nobody was more important than Steve.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. And the great Tom Thayer, kind enough to sit in this morning, and we just listened to Dan Hampton, the Hall of Famer, talking about his dear friend Steve McMichael. And Tom, we know that Ming has, unfortunately, he has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and it's been talked about, and we've heard some of the stories. Now, he's a friend of yours and a guy that you've gone and visited. Just curious, as you look at this situation you know, that's, and I know that there is a certain kind of comic book reality to the, when you think of football heroes, but that guy had a bigger than life personality, you know, the guy from Texas, the whole way he carried himself, him and Hamp, who is just a giant of a man, and this huge intimidation factor that you had from those two guys and from that defense was extraordinary.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was growing up and I watched movies like North Dallas 40, and they had these fabricated personas of NFL players, Hamp and Ming they could play those roles in real life or on the football field. And Ming is, you know, he played such an important role in my career and my development because of the effort that he used to give in practice. It was a battle every single day you'd go out there. And Ming and Hamp took it so serious, and they were such an important role. And it's funny with Hamp talking about how Ming and Hamp's role was instrumental in the success of that defense, because we used to go out of the locker room before kickoff of games, and Ming would say, "Okay, Singletary, let me and Hamp go make you all pro again." And it was the truth of it. What those guys put their bodies through in order to get that defense running efficiently, those guys were instrumental in the success of every phase, whatever you wanted to name the defense, from 46 defense to the standard defense they played. And the attitude that Steve brought to a football team was so contagious because he was such a tough guy. And when I was playing in the USFL and I knew I was coming to the Bears, there was two guys. One guy, Jerry Sullivan, who was the center on our team that came and played for the Bears for a period of time, and he forewarned me about McMichael and Hampton. "Look, man, these guys are legit. They tape their sleeves up for practice. They go live, and it's unbelievable." And then I had another guy that I played with on that same team. His name was Mark Boobin, and he was the roommate of Steve McMichael when they were both playing in New England. Huh. And he was going, "Man, you got to see this McMichael, man. He's crazy. He's out of control." So I came in with such enormous respect for Ming and Hamp because I was a Bears fan. And I grew up here and I would read about him and I would watch him and I would watch their dedication to the game and the way they looked on TV before I ever got here. So nowadays when I do have an opportunity and I visit Ming, I see Ming as the guy that I know of the heroic big force. And I see what the disease has done to him. I've seen it, the toll it takes on other people in my life that I've seen fight through ALS. But I admire everything that Steve offered to me, his friendship, his guidance, his work ethic that in practice, that when you'd go out and play a game on Sunday, that the opponent seemed so much easier because you were practicing against two of the best guys in the history of the league. And Steve, he has Hall of Fame credentials, just like Dan. And I think everybody that's ever been a teammate of Steve, they understand that he's much more intelligent than he ever led you to believe. And he is so dedicated to the Chicago Bears, to the state of Illinois, to the NFL, that I admire the Steve that I know, and it's just super unfortunate what he's fighting through. But I also admire Misty, what she's doing, what she's helping Steve with. You know, they also have a seventh grade daughter. So I don't think that anybody that's ever been around Steve ever has a bad thought of him. It's just the admirable qualities that they invested in the Bears throughout their career. And it's always going to be the Ming that I know, and love the guy to death. And, you know, like he said at the end of his interview, just pray for him because that's right. What's going to help Ming the most.
You know, Tom, when we were speaking about it earlier off the mic, you made a point that I thought was amazing. You talked about not just his work ethic, but how he wanted you to get better. He wasn't trying to dominate you in practice. He wasn't trying to beat you up. He was trying to get the most out of you. And that's what a teammate is.
You know,
right?
Dick Stanfield, our offensive line coach, who's a Hall of Famer himself, one of the greatest players, offensive lineman in the history of the league, one of the greatest coaches. He used to go to McMichael and Hampton and say, "Hey, don't take it easy on these guys today. We need you to bring it at practice today." "Okay, Okay, then here he was, and it was
Thanks,
amazing.
Coach.
It was amazing because when you would go and play against a defensive MVP like Keith Millard, again, as great as Keith Millard was, he was not as good as Steve McMichael. And so you had that luxury every day of where these guys would come out and bring it. And, you know, they would, you know, it was funny if they were teasing Mike Ditka or they were teasing anybody else on the field. It was, they did it because of the love of the team, of the love of the Bears fans and everything that they were able to offer the organization in their time.
You know, I was just a young guy, just kind of college guy. And I ran into those guys downtown one time. They were just kind of hanging out.
Right.
And it was extraordinary because, like, I Dan Hampton, I don't think I've ever seen anyone that big, powerful, gigantic. Just like he just had this, you know, if you see Hamp, even to this day, it's like, oh, that's what a Hall of Famer looks
right.
like.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's like his arm is bigger than my leg. It's just he's just this mountain of a man. And the two of them played off each other. It was hysterical. It was like they could take that act on the road.
That's what I'm saying. When I saw North Dallas 40, that's yeah. what I thought of. Yeah. I looked at these guys going, wow, they are characters in this movie, and they could have walked right from the field to the set and played the part. And, you know, Ming is such an intelligent guy that I wish he would have exposed that side of him more often. But Ming was Ming.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
It's hard for me when I do see him. I don't ever call him Steve. It's either Ming or Mongo, and that's yeah. the words that's always come out of my mouth.
That's who he was when you met him.
Yes.
I remember when he first was in practice with the Bears. He had come from New England, and it was like there was this buzz of, you know, this guy whenever they needed someone to jump in. He would jump into the drill, and he was,
yep.
you know, he was. It was just the way that he was geared.
I remember standing outside the practice field when they practiced in Lake Forest, across the street from the old. And I went there a couple times as a kid, and they were going through this drill. It used to be called Nutcracker.
Yes.
It was just one on one, and Noah Jackson was up there. No one wanted to go against Noah because he was really good at this Nutcracker drill. It was a powerful drill, and so Steve looks and I hear him say, "Oh hell, no one wants to go against him. I'll go." Against him. Come on, Noah. And so there it was, you know, Ming stepping up to the plate when yeah. you needed him the most. And he was a guy that George Halas brought into his office. And he said, "Hey, I hear you got a real a-hole reputation from New England." And he goes, "I don't want you to change a bit. That's why we brought you here, and we want you to stay that way."
That's classic stuff. All right, he's Tom Thayer. We're going to talk to Dan Bernstein next. I believe Layla off today. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.